Good morning. I'm not going to bother you with my Chinese. Ni ha. I love China. Why? Chung kwa. I probably did a bad job of that. But it's really wonderful to be here this morning and to share God's word. And I'm just loaded with my love for the world, but also my love for China. And even this morning, yesterday I got emails from China. Many emails from China wishing me Happy New Year. One of them was from Hangzhou, or Suzhou in China. And she said, it'd be nice if you could just visit my friend and find out if you can help her in any way. And she's in Canada. And so I did. I picked her up this morning, and she's with me. It's really first time, she says, in a church here in Canada. And so I had the joy of bringing her this morning from Joy Station. I am from Port Coquitlam, or Coquitlam. I go to Westwood Alliance, and it's a sister church, and I love it in that area. But I'm surrounded. When I came here 5 years ago from Kamloops, I'm from a farm. Kamloops was big for me, and then I came to Vancouver. Culture shock, surrounded with all these Asians and Iranians and in Coquitlam. So you know, many times I don't speak their language, but I have a bicycle. In fact, I have 10 bicycles. And before students eat at my house, they have to go biking around the Three Rivers. And I have a little box in the back, and I carry my little New Testaments in Iranian and a little DVD that's in 18 languages. And I meet people from all over the world. And you're from Vietnam. Oh, I never been there. Been from China. Oh, I've been to China 3 times. Good, but I don't speak Cantonese very well or Mandarin. But I got a little DEV, and it speaks your language. I'd like to give that to you as a gift. And you know, nobody refuses it. And I got this little Iranian. I got a lot of Iranians, several Iranians now coming to our church, and Egyptians and Syrians. Our church is sponsoring 3 families from Syria. And so, you know, we have these little tools. And so I don't speak their language, but I can give that to them as a gift. And I'm doing that all the time. And my pastor said, Bert has a hot tub ministry. I said, what? I never knew I had a hot tub ministry. I just go to the swimming pool and sit in the hot tub. There's people there that don't know what they got time on their hands. They can't say they're too busy because they're in the hot tub. So one day the pastor says to a new lady from China, Asian looking, oh, you're new here. Welcome here. Who told you about this church? Oh, he says, a guy called Bert. He says, where did you meet him? Oh, in the hot tub. He told me about this church. And so now I'm coming to Westwood Alliance. So easy. Just so easy to do, isn't it? But I couldn't recognize her when I met her because she looked different in the hot tub than she did on Sunday morning. So at the back, I have a little table. I hope you'll browse by it, and I brought a magazine called Faith Today, Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. The article by Mark Buchanan on the church is worth the whole magazine, but there's 2 articles about international students in this magazine. They're there as long as they last. And they also produce a youth magazine for young adults, which is printed, which is public, which is the articles are written by young adults, called Love is Moving. What does the Bible say about love? 3 ways to fall in love. But most of you are not interested in that subject, so just leave the magazine on the table. But some of you might be. 10 people you have never met are about to change your life. Pastor Paul said he's read this book, and it's really a powerful book. And there's others there you can have for a donation. Plus some other free literature, my newsletter. And I got some latest books by George Verver, the founder of OM. He probably has influenced me more than anybody else in my life. And so he just recently sent me a few books called More Drops, Mystery, Mercy, Messiology. Messiology, what is that? I have to pick up the book. Give any donation you can, $5 or whatever, or even $2 if you have it, and you can get that book on the table. It's he's 76 years old, and he's still speaking about 300 times a year around the world, has a passion for God. He wrote a book when he was about 20 years old on literature evangelism. There's dynamite in literature. And I still believe in the power of God's word in literature. And so I hope you can pick some of those up after the service. my message this morning, I know it's where we have a time limit. We have a communion, and I want to relate the end of my message to the communion that we're going to be celebrating at the end of the service. My challenge is, 2 years ago, God took me back to India, where we were married 44 years ago, 45 years ago next month, in the land of India. So I invited a few people there, and they thought they should bring their uncles and aunts and cousins, and soon there was 2,000 people that were coming, and I still had about $10 in my pocket for the wedding. That was, and I just struggled with how I was going to feed all that money, how could I feed that, and dear brother Buck Singh that I worked with, who started 6,000 churches in India, he said, Bert, I want to use your wedding to share the gospel of Christ, because people will come to a wedding before they'll come to a church, and they'll come to your wedding, especially because you're a foreigner. And so he said, I want to use that. So it's a 3-hour wedding service, 2 languages, and then, you know, it started an hour late, like they always do in India. And I said, I can't do it. Only 10 people. I'm Dutch, and I want a cheap wedding. And how I can feed 2,000 people? The church said, Buck Singh said, we'll feed them. Just pay me for the food. I said, how much is that? Oh, he says, it might cost you $100 or $150, depending what you feed them. 1971. I said, I had $10 in my pocket. I'm Dutch, thinking about how much money I need. And so I said, no, we'll just invite 10 people, 20 people. And he just looked at me again in such a disappointing way. Bert, he said, you travel to India by truck, 10,000 kilometers from Europe, and the truck is still going. It's from the scrapyard, a secondhand truck, $100 it cost. You trusted God for an ocean-going ship, and Operation Mobilization got the Logos. You guys, you prayed for a wife to come from Canada before you even had a girlfriend. And they prayed that I would get married in India. Here she's coming. She's arrived to marry you. If 1,000 people come for the wedding, can't he feed them? Go back to your room and pray some more. And so here is this Indian man challenging me with how small my faith was. And so I invited everybody I could think of. My parents came. My mother was baptized 5 days later in the land of India. Stubborn Dutch Canadians were changed. They thought that they would, my parents had 1,000 pigs on their farm in Alberta, but they said I was exaggerating when I said there was 1,000 people coming to my wedding. They had never been to India. And so we had these 2,000 people, and the wedding, the cost of the wedding, the food. But you know, these precious people of India, they shared what they had. They didn't give us any presents except cash. And many of them were poor. And they shared what they had that day. I lived there for 3 years. And you know, I counted it all at the end, and it was over $500. $500 in my wedding only cost $150 for food. I can't believe it. Lord, why didn't I invite more people to my wedding? Well, God is good. And I just shared with Pastor that it's been 50 years. 50 years that I started in ministry. And I had a passion to evangelize the world, a passion to share my faith, but I felt like I was such a failure. And so OM, when I first heard about OM, I asked, what are the qualifications? And they said, oh, we take failures. And I said, I'm signing up right away. And that took me 18 years to learn and before I could graduate from OM. I want to just share from John chapter 9 this morning for the next few minutes from this passage of moving from human thinking to divine motivation. Moving from human thinking. We are surrounded because of our old self and because of the world around us. We are surrounded by human thinking. And with human thinking, we will never reach the world. With human thinking, I would not have gone to India. With human thinking, I wouldn't have got married with $10 in my pocket. No Chinese would do that. You know, no car, no job, no house. I know that I work with the Chinese. I've been to China 3 times. They have to have everything in place before they'll get married. So, you know, human thinking will not solve the world's problems. Human thinking will not help us evangelize. And so I want to move us from human thinking to divine motivation. The heartbeat of Jesus. Look at this passage. As he went along, John 9, Jesus saw a man blind from birth. His disciples ask him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in this life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. And while I'm in the world, I am in the light of the world. And then he goes on the whole rest of the chapter, just spending time with this blind man, spitting on the ground and putting mud in his eyes, and said, told him to wash, and he came seeing, but he still didn't know who Jesus was. And at the end of the chapter, verse 35, Jesus heard they had thrown him out, and when they found him, he said, "Who do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." And Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you." And the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And then he's telling these Pharisees who were questioning what he was doing, he was telling them that they were blind. So the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. The Pharisees said, "What? Are we blind too?" And Jesus said, "If you are blind, you will not be guilty of sin. But now you claim you can see, your guilt remains." When fishermen don't fish. Max Lucado tells a story in his book, In the Eye of the Storm, about a time when his friend and his dad went fishing during spring break. They went to the lake, set up their camper, expecting to fish the next day. During the night, the weather got so bad they could not fish. That was no problem. They could play games and talk and have fun, and tomorrow they could fish. But the next day, the weather was even worse. They tried playing games and telling jokes, but the jokes weren't so funny, and his friend's socks began to stink. The day seemed even longer. By the third day, when the weather had not improved, they were all very grumpy. His friend was a jerk, and his dad couldn't just do anything right. They sat in misery all day. Day four was even colder, but when the dad said they should go home, no one objected. Max Lucado learned a valuable lesson, not about fishing, but about people. When those who are called to fish don't fish, they fight. When those who are called to fish don't fish, they fight. So the first thing I want to look at, there are three parts in this message. One is the tragic situation in John 9, verse 1. There are two tragedies here. Physically, the man was blind. The world is filled with such tragedies. And we just look at the news. What happens in our country and other countries around the world, the tragedy of people losing everything, like in Syria and the Middle East and other countries, Africa. And the world is filled with tragedies, spiritual. Physically, I saw people who were begging in India with no arms or no legs. I saw many poor people. We have poverty, we have disease, we have homelessness, we have prisoners. I worked in Abbotsford for 5 years, and I did a prison ministry for 5 years. Once a week, I would go in and visit my friends in the prison. People would say, "Where are you coming from, Pastor Bird?" I said, "Oh, I just got out of prison today." And that would happen every week. I just got out of prison. I never stayed there. But I had that ministry, and even when some of these prisoners got out of our prison, they stayed in my house. Murderers. We live in a world of tragedy. And then the second one is spiritually, this man was blind, but spiritually, the man was also spiritually blind. The whole chapter deals with not only the physical miracle, but the greatest miracle of all, this man discovering Jesus. With our work with international students, physically, they seem to have everything. They can even drive around with nice cars, BMWs, and even nicer cars, some of these international students now. But they have never heard of Jesus. They're blind without Jesus. I met many students. I was giving out when I first started with international students in Kamloops 15 years ago, I was giving out flyers, "Come to the Passion Play. It's Easter is coming. Come to the Passion Play." And the one student said, "Stop. Why are you giving me this about Easter and Passion Play? I'm from China, don't you know? And in China, we don't have Easter. So please explain what Easter is before you can give me this invitation." We had over 50 of these mostly Chinese students that came to the Passion Play, saw for the first time the life and the death of Jesus Christ. Many of them had never seen it before. Many had never had a Bible before. And so They're spiritually blind. I was in India, and I saw many people that had never heard about Jesus in one village. I asked who Jesus was. They scratched their heads, and they said, he doesn't live here. He might live in the next village. And another person, he ran up to us. I think, I want Jesus. What do you want? Oh, we thought it was a new bar of soap or a new medicine. They had never heard of Jesus before. That's one reason I went to India, to share the gospel with those who had never heard. But now we're coming to the second point. There's this man blind, the Jesus, the disciples in verse 2. Verse 2, well, what are the disciples doing? The disciples said, well, Master, who sinned? This man or his parents who was born blind. Oh, who's to blame now? Who can we point fingers at? Let's have a discussion, theological discussion. When Pastor Paul was at Prairie and I was at Prairie, some students love to have fast theological discussions. Who's right, the Calvinists or the Arminians? Who's right? I'm from the Dutch background, strong Calvinists. And all the Dutch love to argue and fight. In fact, there's a saying among the Dutch. There's two Dutchmen, they make one church. Three Dutchmen make two churches. My father was always saying that the perfect church was in Holland, where people could not smile on Sunday, and they have to wear black. Can you imagine how many of my cousins stayed in the church? I had over 70 cousins in Holland. Most of them had gone away from the church, because that was the church fighting, arguing with each other. Who's right? And so the disciples were arguing with Jesus. This is a great discussion. Who sinned? Because they had the theory that if there was some sickness or evil that comes upon people, somebody has sinned. So the disciples were not really interested in this blind man. They were only interested in who caused this tragedy. Let's argue, let's discuss, let's satisfy our viewpoints. But that's not the answer that Jesus was looking for. I have this little poem that I like to share that somebody wrote. And this really speaks to me. I was hungry and you formed a humanities club and discussed my hunger. Thank you. I was imprisoned and you crept quietly off to your chapel and prayed for my release. Nice. I was naked and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. What good did that do? I was sick and you knelt and thanked God for your health, but I needed your presence. I was homeless and you preached to me of the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I wish you would take me home. I was lonely and you left me alone to pray for me. Why didn't you stay? You seem so close, holy, so close to God, but I'm still very hungry and lonely and cold. And for international students that I work with, I'm homesick. Can you imagine this Chinese New Year, some of them actually went to China back for Chinese New Year. But there's other students that are here. So they're stuck here. So guess what we had to do on Friday night at SFU? My wife was cooking Chinese food for 2 days for 60 people. 60 people. It was Chinese New Year party for them. And then on Friday, one of our Chinese ladies who came from China just a year ago, she wanted us to come to her home because her husband had just arrived. So we had another Chinese dinner last night. Tonight, my wife is cooking for Middle Eastern people from Iran. A Middle Eastern dinner. But tomorrow, Monday night, this Chinese student said, when are you celebrating Chinese New Year? My wife quickly said, Monday night. We weren't planning to celebrate at all in our house. So she and her friends can come over. So there's, and then we had one a week ago with people from our church because somebody from their family was going back to China. So that's the fourth Chinese party that I'm having to endure. I can say haucha, delicious. But I can also say wabala, I'm full. I have to say that many times. But just on that little PowerPoint, there's four things that describe some of us as, what about the disciples and what about us as Christians? So often with human thinking, there is prejudice and pride. I'm so much better than you. I'm from Holland. You know, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. Well, I was brought up with that saying. You know, we look down upon other people. In fact, we had a new teacher in our Dutch school in southern Alberta. She came when I was in grade 8, and she spoke a strange accent. She was from England. By Christmas time, she was gone, and I was one of the culprits. helping make life so bad for her. Why? She's a stranger in our midst. She doesn't even speak English properly. She's from England. So by Christmas, she was gone. Then I went on Operation Mobilization to learn cross-cultural evangelism. My first leader was from England. I had to humble myself. Prejudice and pride. I was going to evangelize India. I'll tell you later what happened. Ignorance. That was a great problem for my parents and ourselves, that we didn't know what was happening in the world. There's three kinds of people in the world. People who watch things happen. People who make things happen. That's only a very few. And then people who don't know what's happening. Which category are you in? That's the three kinds. Watch things happen. Most of us like to watch. We like to watch. Many of us don't know what's happening. I asked people to pray for Turkey for many years when I was with OM. And they would think I was praying, they were talking about Thanksgiving and having turkey. But I was praying for 40 million people that only had 40 Christians in the whole country. One per million. So there is ignorance, there's indifference. We don't care. We're too busy with our daily pursuits. Complacency. I spoke in my church in Westwood Alliance 2 Sundays ago, and I said, Tozer said that complacency is probably one of the greatest sins of the Christian. Complacency. Indifference. We're so busy with our own pursuits, we don't care. And when I go swimming and when I go biking, I think about people I see, because Jesus would see them. Jesus, we must always ask, see with the eyes of Jesus. And then the last one is the lack of faith and fears. Can God really use me? Can he really provide for me? Wow, I can't work with international students. When I started, I'm 55 years old and I can't turn on the computer. Can you imagine working with these kids that have PhDs in computer science? How can I work with them? I had all kinds of fears. And I had to overcome these fears. When I went to India, I had fears. Tremendous fears. Oh, I was 23 years old now. I might never get married. I'd be 25 when I got back. All the Canadians would be gone. That was my biggest fear since I was about 17. That I would never get married. Who would marry a pig farmer? You know, that was a big fear. Next fear, I went halfway to India driving this truck. Somebody told me India had no toilet paper. I was almost ready to drive back, but I was too far on the way. How could I live without toilet paper? I couldn't imagine. So we have, there are so many fears that stop us from doing what God wants us to do. Disciples, they probably thought they could not relate to this man. When I first went to China, I heard China's people eat everything. And then they don't know how to translate it and tell me what is that I'm eating. But somebody, I think in Bible school, Pastor Paul, Pastor Rendell or Maxwell said to us one day, we sing the song, where he leads me, I will follow. The next verse is, what he feeds me, I will swallow. And so that's what and that's what took me to, that's how I survived in China. What is the solution of Jesus? What's the solution of Jesus? Let me quickly share with you. There's just this, the heart of Jesus coming through in this chapter, which is the heart of Jesus in all the four Gospels. Divine compulsion. Jesus said, neither this man sinned or his parents. But he said, you missed the point. You missed what I'm about. These are followers of Jesus that come to church every Sunday. They're satisfied with singing some of those songs. Beautiful songs we sang. Oh, I love that song about Jesus. The more love about loving Jesus with all my heart. For him, I with all the follies of sin, I resign. But how much of that love is really in us? Jesus said, we must. We must get those two words in your heart. That's what took him to that blind man. That's what took him through Samaria. He had to go through Samaria. Must. He was drawn by the fact that he was constrained by love, divine love. It says when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. You know what that word means in the Greek? He felt their needs in his gut. This is not superficial, casual concern. He felt the limp of the cripple. He felt the hurt of the disease. He felt the loneliness of the leper. He felt the shame of the sinners. And once he feels their hurts, he couldn't help but heal their hurts. He forgot his own needs. And so the love of Christ constrains us. The love of Christ. That's what took him to the cross. Love for you and for me before we ever loved him. Divine compulsion. Not we must, we will, if it fits our schedule, if it fits our situation, if we have the time. We have the time for the things we want to do that we love. That's right. And so if you love Jesus, what will you do for him? And so the second thing is not only we must, but we must do the work of him who sent me. Do the work of him who sent me. Ah, so many focuses, people focus on an organization or a church. Oh, I love this music. I love this church. But, well, the pastor didn't shake my hand this morning. He didn't phone me. I asked him to phone me. Maybe he forgot about me. So we'll go to another church. And we change churches so much when it doesn't suit us, because that is how we operate in North American Christianity. But just think about the guy in the Middle East or in Turkey or in some place in China. He might be the only family in that village that loves Jesus. Maybe the only person. We must do the work. I didn't like to drive this truck anymore. I loved truck driving when I was in India till I got to India and I had 4 flat tires one day and blowouts. And I had 1,000 miles to go. And I never wondered, why did this organization give me these secondhand trucks? I have to turn my eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of this earth will go strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. I had to turn my eyes off of this organization and off the truck and on Jesus Christ himself. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. That keeps us going. The last one is divine conviction. Night is coming. Jesus said, night is coming. I can't believe that I've been going for 50 years. But I feel it now. I got a new replacement knee. Every time I go to the airport, it goes beep, beep, beep. But before I couldn't walk. Now I can bike 25 kilometers and hike 20 kilometers because I got a new knee. But I went through the 3 years ago, that little painful incident. Then I got a hand operation the other day, and I had a gallbladder removed. So I got a few things. I need a new head now soon. But, you know, divine conviction. Night is coming. For these international students, some of them, it's that they will only be here for 4 years. Some of them even less. 2 scholars came to my home 2 weeks ago. They're from Nanjing and Beijing. They're at UBC. They're professors in the forestry at Nanjing University, another professor in Beijing. They came all the way from UBC to my house because I asked them when I went onto the college campus, have you ever been to a Canadian home? Well, we go to church. We're studying the Bible. But have you been to a Canadian home? Never. And the lady was going back in February. I said, would you like to come to our house? Of course. So they came all the way. They came early. I took them around Port Moody and Burnaby Pacific Mountain, Burnaby Mountain Park. And they were so happy. And then they came to my house. And they couldn't believe my wife had cooked a Chinese dinner. And they came with special gifts. And they were just so overwhelmed with the love that we showed them. They're studying the Bible for the first time. And you know, many of these students, they'll never go to a Canadian home or a church unless we invite them. Unless we invite them. June, when I first started working with these international students, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what I was doing. But I saw the coffee shop at the university in Kamloops. I sat there and there was a Japanese girl sitting by herself. I said, what's your name? She said, Junko from Japan. I said, she said, who are you? I said, I'm Bert. I'm just starting to work with international students. Oh, she said, then you can help me. I said, what? She said, yeah, I need help. I said, what's your problem? She said, I just moved into a Canadian home, and I thought it was a good home. I wanted to have Canadian family, but this home is a nightmare. The girl, she's a teenager. She's into parties and drugs, and it's all noise. And the mother's a single mother, but she got 2 boyfriends, and they're fighting over her. And so it's all full fights and warfare. And she says, I'm a student. I want to study and be in a quiet home. I said, that's a problem. What do you want to do? She said, I'm going to move. I says, when? She said, this week, because next week I'm going to Japan. And when I come back, I want to be in my new homestay. I says, wow, that's great. I said, where do you want to move to? She said, your house. I said, you're coming to see my wife. And she went to see my wife. And the next day she was in our home. And the long journey, 5-year journey of that girl, she's following Jesus today in Japan. She's following, I spoke in her church in Osaka. But it was a long journey. She was totally an atheist when she came in our home. Didn't want anything to do with God. But she said many times, she said, I wish you were my real parents. I wish you were my real parents. And I just close with this divine solution of Jesus. It helped. That was his, you know, I hope I can close with one illustration. Just to fire you up about this seminar that I'm doing at the end of the month. I thought I was such a great student from Prairie Bible College, dedicated from the farm to the Bible school, and I was going to reach the world. I'm Dutch too, so I can work hard, and I'm driving this truck. And the first month in India, I thought it was just like heaven. I thought these Christians are just so on fire for God, and I was just seeing so many things happen. They were going to the villages, and I was the driver driving them to villages that had never seen Christians before. They filled the truck up. I thought we could only take 20. They put 50 in the truck. No problem in India. But one day it all fell apart. One day it fell apart. I began to realize India was different than Canada, and I'm starting to miss Canada, and I'm starting to miss the food, and I'm starting to miss the fact that I'm hungry at 6 o'clock. But they would have an evening meeting after 10 villagers or so, and then the meeting would go till 9:30 or 10, and then they would have dinner. Can you imagine a Dutch farmer? 6 o'clock, I'm already hungry. I'm hungry like crazy. And then on that day, India doesn't have maps, and sometimes they don't even have roads. And that day they said, go right, we're going to the last village. But they got lost, and there was no path, but they got to a river, but there was no bridge. They said, just go through it with your truck. Crazy people. I was just so angry. I said, and when are we going to get? Well, instead of 6 o'clock getting or 6:30, it was about 9:30, 10 o'clock. By the time we got there, everything was dark. And I could smell the Christians. I was cooking rice. I was just beginning to write like rice. Praise the Lord. Food is still there. The leader, the pastor said, Daryl Burke, first we're going to wake up the village and have a meeting. Then we're going to have food. Of course, I have to pretend I'm just as dedicated as they are. And so I said, okay, I hope the meeting is short. So I said, I can't believe it. No, I said, first I said to the pastor, we're going to do it tomorrow. He said, no, tomorrow we're in another village. This is the only time. I said, they won't wake up. They won't come out of their beds. He said, just wait and see. So they went around singing songs, and in a half an hour, half of the village came out of their beds, and they were sitting around the truck. I peeked out. I said, wow, 500 people or so. It's unbelievable. And then the pastor comes running. They were starting to sing some songs. It's already 10:30. He said, Bert, come out. I said, what for? I'm waiting for the meeting to be over. He said, you're speaking tonight. I said, you never told me. He said, no, we told the whole village you're here. I said, they've done it again. Never planning. They don't have 7-star agendas. They don't have, they don't do anything in advance. I said, okay, I will speak. And he said, first there's a brother going to share his testimony for 5 minutes, and then you're on. That brother spoke for 45 minutes. Now it's 11 o'clock, 11:15. I said to the pastor, I do not want to speak tonight. I do not want to speak. They want to go back to their bed. Pastor said, please, please. They want to hear you. I said, okay, I can close it down in 5 minutes, right? Or 10 minutes. And then I spoke from my heart. But before I spoke, I went on my knees. And as I got on my knees, I saw a vision of Jesus going to the garden, weeping for me, dying for me, going to the cross for me, going not the first mile or the second mile, but going the 1,000 miles for me. And I said, Jesus, I do not have love for these people. I do not have love for them. Fill me with your love. My love is exhausted. And I asked Jesus to fill me. And Jesus filled me, and I spoke for a half an hour, I don't know how long, that was closer to 11:30. And I asked people who wanted to come to Christ, and 50 people raised their hands. And we were praying with them at midnight in this village, people coming to Jesus. And I couldn't believe it. I was helping to pray with them, and suddenly I realized my brothers and sisters were all gone. They were eating, and I forgot I was hungry. Jesus had filled me with himself. Jesus had filled me with himself. And you know, the only way we're going to reach this world is through the solution of Jesus. Count Zinderdorf, a wealthy man who had everything in Germany in the 1700s, he had money, he had wealth, he had status, he was one of the wealthiest men. One day he went to a museum in Germany, one of the most famous museums that had a statue of Jesus. And he looked at that statue for 3 hours or 4 hours. He looked at Jesus on the cross, and he saw those words, I have done this for you. I have done this for you. He spent 2 hours looking at that. Then he looked at the words in the bottom. What have you done for me? What have you done for me? And that vision of Jesus in that museum, that famous statue of Jesus, propelled Count Zinzendorf to give all his time, all his resources to raising the modern missionary movement that we know today. It was the Moravian movement. The people that actually sold their farms and their lands, even became slaves so they could reach the slaves. It was the modern missionary movement. It was Jesus that gave that. And Jesus is the only one that can keep us and keep us going to people we don't like, people that we don't understand, people that are different than us, the Muslims, the Iranians that are coming to my house tonight. One of them, he has gone to Iran and says,